Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, beautiful humans. If a professional, polished, well-edited podcast is what you're after, then move right on.
If, however, you love unfiltered banter, unedited bloopers, authentic heart sharing, and a very generous dash of holistic health education, then you're in the right place.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to the Holistic Health Podcast. So excited about this episode because we are both big endo fans. Can you be a fan of endo? We're fans of bringing awareness and tools and empowerment to the conversations around endometriosis. So I actually think I might just quickly dive in to give you a little bit of a heads up around, you know, what we're trying to do in this episode, which is really just start to share with you some myths slash bust some myths and just share a few facts about endometriosis, because I do think that even though awareness and those conversations around endometriosis are starting to happen more, and I do feel like there are more people talking about it and talking in a way that does make sense, I still feel like, and Amy, I know you're the same, I still feel that, you know, clients are coming in and having really kind of like not warped, but like misinformed ideas around endo that can often lead them down incorrect paths, or it just becomes really confusing. I think it's kind of like that thing where whenever there's a topic that starts to get more awareness around it, or there's more people talking about it, it sometimes can amplify the myths or the misconceptions if you're not necessarily listening to the people who are sharing the facts. So we'll give it our best shot. The first one I wanted to share with you or to remind you of is that the severity of the disease or the severity of endometriosis doesn't necessarily correlate with the symptoms. So for anyone who has, you know, been diagnosed with endo, you may or may not have come across endometriosis stages. It's often diagnosed as stage 1, 2, 3, or 4. And in stage 1, basically what they're, the way they're quantifying that is that they're, you know, is minimal endo. So there might be a few small endometriosis lesions found on organs or in peritoneal tissue. So the peritoneum is basically like the cavity where a lot of those organs sit within. And there's little to know what's called fibrotic lesions. Then stage 2 is basically mild, and there's more lesions in terms of number, and the lesion depth is deeper. So I guess how embedded those lesions are tend to be deeper, and there may actually be some what's called fibrotic lesions. And then in stage 3, that's when it gets to it being called moderate. And there's multiple deeper lesions, and also there can be some endometriomas, which are basically like cysts or growths, so to speak, on one or both ovaries, and there's a presence of the fibrotic lesions there. And then in stage 4, which is considered to be severe, there'll be, well, you know, several or many deep, what's called deep infiltrating lesions. And often there are, you know, endometriomas or those larger kind of cysts on one or both of the ovaries. And there's lots of like more dense or tightly packed fibrotic lesions. So the way that they're like establishing those stages is by doing like looking at it through a laparoscopic surgery situation, and we'll also talk a little bit later about ultrasound and things like that. But basically, no matter where you sit in that stage, it doesn't necessarily mean that your pain is going to correlate to that. So you could have stage 1 endo and have horrific pain. You could have stage 4 endo and actually be asymptomatic, which means you're not actually experiencing any symptoms. And the way that you may actually find out is through, you know, if you're going through a fertility journey and they can't find any other reason for why you're struggling, and, you know, one of the avenues of investigations ends up being a laparoscopy, which is a surgery to have a look essentially inside that cavity where endometriosis most commonly grows, that may be the only way that you find that out. And I think, you know, to give you a bit of context around the fertility piece, because I know it is something that comes up a lot, is currently the statistics estimate that 20 to 50% of females that present to fertility clinics have endometriosis, and that's inclusive of whether or not they're symptomatic or they're not symptomatic. And it also, like, I guess another way of viewing that, a similar statistics, is that 30 to 50% of those diagnosed with endometriosis will experience infertility, and 40 to 60% of people with, you know, pelvic pain or who have quote unquote unexplained infertility that actually go through investigations to find out why end up having endometriosis. So I'm not sharing those statistics for anyone to feel panicked or fearful around their own fertility. I'm more so sharing them, first of all, to just kind of bring awareness to the fact that, like, endometriosis in the context of fertility or of struggling with fertility issues should always be a differential or a consideration in a potential driver, even if you don't have lots of symptoms. But also to share that if you have gone through a laparoscopic surgery, for example, and you've been told, which has happened to some, you know, some patients of mine over the years, oh, it's just stage one, but your experience has been horrific from a pain perspective, not to feel like the conclusion from that is, oh, the pain must just be in my head because it quote unquote wasn't that bad. It's really to highlight the fact that there is just a big discrepancy between disease presence and your experience of that condition. And the last thing I'll say on that point before I hand it over to Amy is just a reminder that statistics are helpful, but you're also not a statistic. So this is statistics are taking the general population and quantifying that, you know, in a statistic. But what I always remind people of is that, like, there's still so much that is within your control, and a lot of these statistics often are being, you know, you're being grouped in with people who maybe aren't super interested in their health, or they're not out there pursuing other holistic alternative therapies or things that have evidence in supporting endometriosis or fertility support. So it's not that these group statistics equal your individual statistics. It's just a way to quantify the problem when we're trying to educate or share on it.
Yes.
So, what's your next one?
Well, I was just going to say that's a really good point. And I think one thing I'll just add to that is I think sometimes, particularly because women tend to be gaslit as far as pain goes, it can be really confusing, especially with how long it can take to be diagnosed. And I'm just saying this for those women who are graded with, like, what would be considered on paper to be less severe endometriosis, not to freak out or be concerned or upset or worried in any way that if your disease status is considered mild, but your pain is really high, that just can be the way that it is. It depends on its location. It depends on your overall body's inflammatory load. It depends on so many things. So don't think for a second that there's anything wrong with you or your pain receptors, or maybe you have, you know, blown it up too largely. That's so not the case. And I also know that for women who've got really bad disease but have had not so bad symptoms, it can also come as a real shock. So I think that first point is so important, that the severity of the disease doesn't necessarily match the severity of the symptoms. Mm-hmm. But the next little factoid we want to drop in your ear holes is that often we see women being recommended to just get pregnant as a solution or a cure, which is just absolutely fucking outrageous for so many reasons. So many reasons. I mean, I could feel my knickers getting stuck up my crack as I think about it.
They're up real high right now.
Yeah. So I guess the main point here is that pregnancy doesn't solve anything. Yes, it might give you a period of time of a respite from the symptoms. But first of all, creating a brand new human to avoid the symptoms for 9 or 10 months is just such an extreme move. And unless you are planning to start a family and the timing aligns with you, just getting pregnant is an otherwise ridiculous strategy, because the problem isn't being improved or solved or resolved during the pregnancy, and it's going to be there after you give birth. And further to that, any of the drivers that were contributing to endometriosis are also going to be online during your pregnancy. And inflammatory drivers and things like that during pregnancy can have problematic consequences on an unborn child or during pregnancy. So, you know, if you're in the season of having a family and you do get respite from it during pregnancy, great. But it certainly is it's very poor advice to be using it as a strategy to relieve the symptoms, and everything that was going on for you prior to the pregnancy is going to be right there waiting for you after you've given birth.
Yeah. No more to add to that. patient point made. And then the next thing that I guess I also want to highlight is the fact that, like, not all endometriosis patients have high estrogen. So this is such a layered and conversation as well, but basically, like, estrogen can be a driver of endometrial lesion growth, because estrogen generally is like a growth promoter, so to speak, for lack of a oversimplified term, but I will do my best to not go down too many rabbit holes. But it can be a driver of disease proliferation or growth, but it's not necessarily a cause. And I can tell you, hand on heart, clinically, that I would say that the majority of patients perhaps do have higher estrogen, or they have a more sensitivity to the estrogen that is there. But I also have several patients currently and in the past where they have endometriosis, but they have normal estrogen levels. And so that's why I think it's really important that if you, for example, you have endometriosis and you've heard, oh, I just need to focus on clearing my estrogen and that's it, and then you kind of go down a big DIY course of just buying estrogen clearing supplements, you can make a problem worse where you don't necessarily need to, because estrogen is what we call a Goldilocks hormone. So we want enough, not too little and not too much. And so if you are someone who actually you don't have high estrogen and that's not the key driver of your experience of endometriosis, and then you go clearing that or you're over-clearing it, you can then create other issues or symptoms from not having enough estrogen around. So it's a really good idea, even if it's just for a time, that you actually do some hormone testing. Perhaps you work with a practitioner to really understand where your hormones are at. And I also think it's really important for practitioners to remember that there is, estrogen production problems, and then there can also be estrogen clearance problems, and also that endometrial tissue itself can also be estrogenic, in terms of it can then turn into a situation where it's creating more estrogen. So there's lots of layers to consider, but I think to just assume outright that all people with endometriosis have high estrogen, and therefore we treat it that way, whether that's by ourselves, by doing some Googling, or under a practitioner's help, or maybe you're a practitioner that's listening and that's what you've been taught or that's what you're doing. Like, wrong way, go back. Like, let's actually look at someone on an individual level and see what's actually a driver here for them as an individual, rather than what's just a cookie cutter approach to it.
Yes, I think that's such an important point to make, because there is a bit of a belief out there that it's it's an estrogen dominant or an estrogen driven condition, which is certainly one facet of it for many women, but it's so much bigger than that. And you can absolutely do yourself a disservice by trying to lower estrogen when maybe that actually isn't a problem for you at all. Speaking of which, I also want to touch on the fact that surgery isn't a solution either. What do I mean by that? Surgeons can cut out everything but the cause. And one of the things that frustrates me to no end is seeing women get laparoscopic surgery for endo, to have endometriosis tissue removed, thinking that that's a solution, only to find it comes back and they have to repeat the surgery, which of course causes more adhesions every time they do it. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't get the surgery. In fact, for many women, some of the clients that I have, that has been really helpful, but it really must be understood that it's a part of the toolkit, and that really addressing the underlying drivers and actually having that in place prior to the surgery, along with surgical support and post-surgical support as well, is really the way to go. So if you're listening to this and you're earlier on in your journey and you haven't yet had surgery, or maybe you've had one bout already, it may not necessarily be true for you, but what Nat and I see commonly is that women end up having to go back for a second and a third surgery because it just keeps growing back because the underlying cause hasn't been addressed. So if I needed surgery for that, I would gladly have it. But what I am acutely aware of is there are things underneath that need help, and you've got to address that in order to have a successful result and to stack the odds in your favor of actually surgery being a one-time thing. And remove the drivers that will allow that to return. So further to that though, another type of surgery that women can be offered is a hysterectomy. Now, first of all, I'll say that you have to be so desperate and suffering a lot to agree to have someone cut out your uterus. Like, I know you have to be at your wit's end. So if there's a choice that you're facing or it's a choice that you've made, we absolutely send you all the love and all the hugs. I don't think it's a decision anyone makes lightly at all. However, if you're on your journey with endometriosis and that's kind of a potential offer that might get made to you either now or down the track or when you've had your last child, please also know that that doesn't fix the problem. Ultimately, again, doesn't cut out the cause, and it also doesn't necessarily cut out the endometriosis issue, because endometrial tissue can actually grow anywhere in the body. I know someone who would actually get a nosebleed every time they had a period. Endometrial tissue has been found all throughout the body. In fact, it's even been found in men, which I find quite interesting. But removing the uterus, where a lot of the symptoms can be experienced, doesn't remove the drivers or the cause, and therefore the inflammatory elements that are going to continue to impact the rest of your cells in your body. And we know there's other sort of secondary issues that can be associated with endometriosis, and getting a hysterectomy doesn't remove the risks of those either. We're not saying don't do it, but please know that a holistic approach to endo is going to be the best approach, where you're actually addressing the causes and correcting all of those underlying imbalances.
Yes, hear, hear. And yeah, as you said, like if you've already made that decision to do surgery, make sure that you've got strategies in place holistically to make the most of that so that you can help to prevent the tissue from regrowing back. And I actually feel like this is where natural medicine shines, is in preventing scar tissue formation and in addressing the underlying drivers. And something I always remind people of is that you do not have to choose between conventional medicine and naturopathic or holistic medicine. You can have both. Like, and I think it's sometimes there's a little bit of a perceived, misconception out there that, oh no, either I'm natural and I do natural things only, or I do medical things. And it really, I think sometimes there's a big sigh of relief when you actually hear you can pick and choose, you use whatever tools in the toolkit, conventional medicine, naturopathic medicine, alternative medicine, that are going to provide you as an individual with the best outcome, and you weigh up the pros and the cons for you as an individual rather than feeling like you have to over-identify with one method or the other. Mm-hmm. So the next factoid that I like that we're calling them a factoid. Mm-hmm. the next factoid, got to bring a bit of fun to this, is just around ultrasounds. So there is, again, like a bit of a misunderstanding or confusion around whether or not endometriosis can be diagnosed via an ultrasound. So sometimes clients come to me and they say, oh no, I've had an ultrasound and they said I don't have endo. Mm-hmm. And so what I wanted to clear up here is a few things. So first of all, ultrasound, basically how reliable this is very heavily dependent on the skill of the technician that is actually performing the ultrasound, the type of ultrasound that you're doing as well. And also it has, I guess, its limitations in the types of endometriosis that it has a high accuracy to detect. So there is high accuracy on using ultrasound when you are going to a skilled technician that knows and does these kinds of ultrasounds and has extra training or development in actually picking up endometriosis. So let's just say that that's the type of person that's doing it, what I'm talking about when it's accurate. So for ovarian endometriosis, so endometriosis that's present on the ovaries, it has high accuracy. It also has high accuracy in detecting more like deep endometriosis. And also the pouch of Douglas, which is a certain part of your anatomy, is involved in that. And the other thing that it can help is something called organ mapping and mobility. So basically how well or how movable the organs are when they're doing the ultrasound gives a little bit of an idea around what the potential risk of adhesions being present or fibrotic lesions being present is. But the limitations are that it's not at all a reliable detector of superficial endometriosis, so endometriosis that is closer to the surface rather than deep embedded into the tissue. And so that's where we go, cool, like it can be used to pick up endometriosis if you have a skilled technician, but not all types of endometriosis. So what I often say to people is, it can be used as part of the diagnostic workup or toolkit, but the absence of a finding on ultrasound alone doesn't mean the absence of endometriosis because of those limitations that I've shared. So that's where having multiple ways of assessing you as an individual is actually really helpful. Technically speaking, at this point in time, laparoscopic surgery is the gold standard for for actually diagnosing endometriosis, but we have other tools in the toolkit to be able to give us hints or indications that you may have endometriosis, and that can include things like just a good clinical history, actually physically examining you. We can also look at certain blood test markers and patterns. Ultrasound can be part of it. There's some evidence around using MRI, and then there's also, you know, further on from that, the laparoscopic surgery that I mentioned, and also they can biopsy the tissue and look at it under a microscope. So there's lots of different ways, and depending on where you're at in the journey, what you're comfortable with, what you want to have investigated at this point in time and what you don't, gives you different options. And I guess because it is such a complex disease that crosses many different areas in terms of inflammatory, hormonal, immune dysregulation, that's why I feel that using a broad range of investigative tools is helpful in forming a picture of how likely or not likely it is that endo is part of your story. And something that I often, you know, tell people that I'm working with more holistically, particularly if they don't want to go down the surgery route, and so we don't have an option to know with absolute 100% certainty what it is. If it's all like looking, smelling like endometriosis, bar having that laparoscopic surgery done, from a holistic naturopathic standpoint, we're treating the drivers, not the end label of the disease. So it almost doesn't matter, you know, and you don't need to know with 100% certainty in order to have help with the symptoms that you're experiencing, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Love that. Well, that was a masterclass on the things that every woman with endo should know. And I think hopefully if you've listened to this and you have endo, or even maybe you suspect it and you're just on the beginning of your journey, this has given you some deeper insights into the nature of this condition and also some pitfalls to look out for. I certainly know if you are at the beginning of your journey, or even if you've been in this for a while, it can feel a bit overwhelming, especially if you're not fully aware of all of those holistic elements that you could ultimately access. But thankfully, Nat has created a nice resource to help you get started. Nat, do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I do. Yes. So thank you. And yeah, I created basically a guide, because I feel that this information needs to be in the hands of as many women as possible. And I know sometimes, you know, people aren't ready to invest in one-to-one consultations. Maybe that's not within your access point at this point in time. And as I said, I feel really passionate about there being accurate and reliable information for people out there, particularly as this space gets noisier and therefore people can become a little bit more overwhelmed. So the guide is called Endo Nourish Guide, and it's available on my website. But in a nutshell, basically what I run you through in there is, you know, I give you a lot of detailed information around understanding both endometriosis and adenomyosis, which often co-occur together, and also how to, you know, help you to advocate for getting an accurate diagnosis, if that's what you wish, and in including both that medical and those more functional medicine approaches that I was talking about. I also have popped in there a lot of the foundational tests that I take my one-to-one clients through in regard to uncovering some of those contributors to symptoms that you might be experiencing, and a lot of tools in there around how to be an advocate for yourself in the conventional, you know, medical system as you're going down that path, which I think is really helpful, before starting to have a lot of those conversations with specialists, so you can actually ask the right questions, you know what your options are. I also do share with you optimal ranges for hormones, rather than just quote unquote normal, where I'm actually specifying what I consider to be optimal. I also have included in there you know, food as medicine tips for endo and adeno, and definitely some information around, you know, creating a balanced plate in endo, foods that you might want to include and also ones that you might want to limit or avoid. There's a lot of resources around just lifestyle changes, you know, tips around movement, additional therapies, other kind of acute period pain remedies that you might want to try out to help you in your overall holistic management of your symptoms. And then there's a few other bonus things which you can have a look at on the website as well. And it's super affordable. It's under $100 to get. It's only $79 at the moment at the time of recording the podcast. So if you are someone with adenomyosis or endometriosis and you want some holistically minded support, then I would really encourage you to go and grab a copy of that or share it with someone in your world who might benefit from it. And of course, the step beyond that, if you go through that or you're already at a point where you're actually really wanting to have some personalized one-to-one support, then always feel free to reach out to Amy or I, and we're more than happy to help you with that as well.
Well, friends, that was a big episode, but thank you for sticking with us.
Yeah, and we will be back in your ear holes next week, and we'll give both of us some time to untie our knickers after some intense conversation there.
Thank God for that. Have a good week, friends.
Bye. You've been listening to the Holistic Health Podcast with Amy and Nat.
If you loved this episode, then make sure you share it on Instagram and give us a tag.
If you'd like to help us spread the holistic health message far and wide, then we would also so appreciate it if you left a rating and review. This helps us more than you know.
And don't forget to come and say hi over on Instagram. See you next week.